When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Goes right.
Oh! Does anybody know how to post videos?
Welcome back in to the Drop Step Podcast, episode 45. Thanks to everybody checking us out on Shaq Fu Radio. Shout out to Big Shaq, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Home team Brandon Leak here, Book the Hook. We got the B-Dog, Brandon Harper, and we got Houston. A few things to get into this episode, guys. We have Kobe Bryant. Says that women could and hints that will be playing in the NBA. We'll get to that. Zion Mania kicks off on a primetime slot for the NBA and the Pelicans. We'll get to that. And the Hawks get a big win. Can they shift gears and get some things going here on the final stretch run of the season? And we'll start with that. The Hawks, they win without Trae Young. They beat the Clippers 102-95. Interesting game because no Trae. And we've seen some different things when he's not there. And what we saw initially, Hawks down 21, down 19 at the half, couldn't make a shot in the first quarter, finished the first quarter missing 16 straight shots. But they played well defensively in the second half, hit the offensive boards like nobody's business in the second half, and closed out the game as a team. That was a fun win, even though the Clippers were undermanned. It was still a game that could have been lost, and the Hawks didn't lose it.
Yeah, this was a game to see which team was going to come out victorious without their leaders on the floor. Like you said, in the first half, the Hawks shot horrifically. And the crazy part about it is that game seemed so slow in the first half. It seemed snail slow. And I'm like, I'm looking up at the scoreboard. I'm like, bro, this is the slowest first half in the world because they were down by as much as, 25 at one point in time. And it just looked ugly. They couldn't hit a three to save their life. They were turning the ball over. And a lot of people can say whatever they want about Trae Young and talk about whether he's not an all-star or not, which is ridiculous. But the one thing that we know that Trae brings to the floor is he sparks a certain level of energy that the Hawks just did not have, especially in the first half. Now, the second half, they came alive. I think the Clippers had some defensive lapses as well. But that first half, Trae brings the energy for the entire game. He's just a lightning rod that just sparks it for the entire team, and they just didn't have it in their first half last night.
Man, Montrezl Harrell was a problem in that first half.
Yes,
man.
It was.
It was ugly to watch, man. It was like, because he was getting any and everything that he wanted against the Hawks. And it was kind of discouraging, but I'm going to get the Hawks this, man. Like, they could have laid down. Like, they literally, that game was over if they had let it been over. They had every reason to just go ahead and mail it in for the rest of the night. So that second half was, that was the determination and the effort that I want to see from them. When Trae is involved, you know, I got a big problem when people perform when the pool is empty. Like, bro, shine when everybody's shining. You know, I don't want to see a second. I mean, when there's another alpha on the floor, you still an alpha. Like, specifically John Collins. Like, I love the 33 and 16. Like, but I need 33 and 16 when Trae's dropping 40. You know, like, I need that. That's when we're really going to be at our best, when they can hit their stride together, and I'm waiting on it.
The biggest thing that I heard from the coach and from the players last night was effort, energy. Their energy changed in the second half. Well, that sounds a lot to me like it's in your mind.
Well, the biggest thing for me is how everybody else contributed. I thought the ball moved well. They had 21 assists. even though they didn't shoot well. The Hawks only shot 35%, so they didn't make a shot. But the energy, the way the ball moved, the way they played team basketball, and then you had a guy with a hot hand, Brandon Goodwin, with 19 points in the fourth quarter. That helped get you home. I think that was something that you could learn from, that you can have a tough night shooting and still win an NBA game. Got to the free throw line, made their free throws, and with all that, the game was still close, and it wasn't until DeAndre Hunter knocked down that three-pointer with about a minute to go that really sealed the deal. You still didn't have the deal finished with all of the good stuff you did on the poor shooting night. That's what I hope they get out of that game.
Well, I'm Debbie Downer. I just know it at this point. I know it because I'm sitting here looking at this game, and you actually said it before we started, home team, talking about we just beat up on their bench.
Yeah, we have you to know, keep that like, in perspective, too.
Like, we were missing Trey, but they didn't have Kawhi or Paul George playing last night.
Or Patrick Beverly.
Or Patrick Beverly playing last night. So that little game that we won, yeah, and then Demontrez missed 7 free throws, like he said, in critical times last night. He missed 4 in a row in the last two minutes of the game.
In the Hawks' defense, you can't fit all of that in the win-loss column. It still looks like a win. looks like a win. So I say that because, like, I hope these boys can take some of this, turn it into some confidence, and take it on the road with them to OKC, because that is a game that you should be competitive in. Granted, you just beat the shorthanded Clippers, but you're going up against a younger, probably more talented OKC team, but this is still a game that you should be competitive
in. You're not in the realm, as a Hawks team right now, you're not in the realm of saying, yeah, we won this game, but they didn't have this and they didn't have that. You need to take the wins wherever you can get them. Why? Because any game that you go in, no matter who you're battling against, you could really lose that game. I don't care how bad the team is. Why? Because you're bad right now. So you could be even worse than them.
The Hawks could be that much better if that same energy that you see in the second half when they went to the locker room to tell each other, hey, get your head out your behinds and let's play some ball. If they do that before the game, then how could we really look? Because it's really been the same thing consistently throughout this season. You're not playing well in the first quarter. You're having to make these huge, unsurmountable comebacks to still lose a game. This one just happened to work out for you to where you want it.
You're still most people's get right game.
You know what? But you don't have to be.
You don't have to be, but
it's a mentality.
But let's look at the reality of what we've seen this season. You are the worst team in basketball. So when teams come into your building or you go into their building, they may be bad, but they're looking at it like they're worse than us. Yes,
that's not fair because we're only the worst team in basketball because we had a guy out for 25 games. We're only the worst team in basketball because he was suspended for 25 games. So you can't tell me that, they should just be mailing it in on us.
No, I'm not saying they need to mail it in. I got to be the bad guy because I have some questions about this roster.
Okay.
You and me
and
both.
I think that's a part of it. The reason why the Hawks are teetering with the worst record between them and the Warriors is a big part. A big part has to do with John Collins missing a third of the season.
But.
And that goes to some other things. That, in conjunction with a lack of veterans, that in conjunction with a lack of center play, that in conjunction with a lack of a wing off the bench, all of that and more equals 11 wins so far this point in the season, in my most humble opinion. I know B-Dog won't agree, no. And I've upset people who I work with and care about deeply going down the road we're about to go down, so if you get mad at me, We can learn to get past this.
No. And I'm not mad with you because obviously the process, the steps that we've taken from the bullpen to coming to this
roster.
It is. Okay. But you're saying that are you saying that it's awful because it's void of talent? Because if you're saying that it's void of talent, I don't believe that it's void of talent.
I'm not saying that. I think we do have talent.
But the cupboard is at its bare minimum. That's what he's saying.
Where we are now, when I say team,
okay,
that is the guy who is 11th, 12th, 8th on the roster as well. That includes Chandler Parsons and Evan Turner.
Well,
and
you
Vince
knew you
Carter,
weren't getting nothing out of Chandler.
But you're not getting anything. Those are your veterans. When you have veterans, they're supposed to bring some other things. Vince Carter, Chandler Parsons, and Evan Turner are your veterans. You're getting nothing. Jabari Parker was a good story, but he's injured. He's not there. Bruno Fernando, Alex Lynn, Damian Jones, those are your three centers who, in my opinion, are all backups. All of that with John Collins missing 25 games is why we are not a good roster.
But let me tell you this. Some of those veterans, maybe outside of Jabari, and even you could probably put him in there as well, there are veterans in the league who still need other veterans to help make them better.
True.
It seems like we have a few of those guys. We say, well, these are our veterans. Yeah, but those are also veterans that need to be on other teams who have better guys around them in order for them to perform at their highest level. And we don't have that. They're depending on the young guys to get these veterans kind of going because this is a young guys team.
They're completely miscast it. The Hawks are miscasted because they've got guys, just like you just said, man, like they've got guys doing things that they shouldn't and have no business doing.
It's poorly constructed.
Chandler Parsons should not be mentoring anyone in the NBA. He should not be a Vince Carter. I don't think that those are the type of players that we don't have those players in place. Let me ask a two-tier question. Who's the third best player on the Hawks?
Kevin Huerter.
Is Kevin Huerter a starter for the majority of the NBA?
No.
Man,
there's a gap. He is a
rotational player.
There is a huge gap. We're progressing him to the point to become a starter. We're grooming him in that fashion. But as of right now, like, it ain't a whole lot of teams in the NBA that he's starting for.
And that goes to Cam Reddish, too. Now, obviously, there's a lot to go to. But if the Hawks had a center, you're going to slide some people down. John Collins goes to power forward. Then you slide some guys down. And sliding guys down gets Cam Reddish to the bench. So, to your point, if Kevin Huerter's not a starter on other teams, well, neither is Cam Reddish.
No, he's not.
So, we have two of our starters who wouldn't start for other teams in the NBA.
The difference is when you're comparing those two, teams also look, and you can say we potential this and potential that. If teams are, for instance, if teams are wanting to look for trade pieces with the Hawks,
okay,
they're not looking at Kevin Huerter. They're looking at Cam Reddish. Why? Because he's younger and his ceiling is higher.
On potential.
So, right. But they already know. But they also know that talent-wise, they believe that Cam is more talented than Kevin Huerter. They believe Kevin Huerter is pretty much a one-trick pony.
I wouldn't say that.
Not a one-trick, but think about it.
Dude, they're basically the same player.
No, they're not.
Kevin Huerter is better than Cam Reddish right now.
Okay. Kevin Huerter is better than Cam Reddish.
When they were in discussions with Detroit, Detroit wanted Cam Reddish back. And the Hawks said no. Why didn't they put Kevin Huerter in there if they're the same player?
Well, I mean, there are a million ways that could go. One, you just drafted a guy with the top 10 pick in the draft. To trade him 2 months, 3 months later makes no sense. For Andre Drummond is a big help.
Why not?
He's not, I don't think, the answer for the Hawks. He is somebody who would help the Hawks, most definitely, but he is not the guy who is the answer. So if you're trading a top 10 pick for a guy who's not the answer, you're going to take a whole lot of heat and fire for that.
They just told me that they are the same player. So regardless of where he is picked, if you don't think his upside is higher than Kevin Huerter's, or you don't think he's better and they're the same person, then what difference does it make where he was taken? Trade him if they're the same. If you're going to get the same level of production for him, it shouldn't matter which one you trade.
Well, maybe in the future, maybe Cam gets a little bit better.
But that's what I'm talking about.
And he ups his value and he's able to get something down the road. Who's to say? I don't know if Cam Reddish is going to be here 3 years from now. I don't know that.
But with these picks, you're really banking on potential because it ain't a whole lot of stuff out there for you to watch anyway.
No.
So that's the reason.
But I agree with them. I think right now, Kevin Huerter is better. Defensively, he is good. Offensively, he is more of a threat to score and knock down three-pointers. He is going to be more likely to get to the free throw line.
More likely to grab rebounds.
And help you on the boards as well. So I think right now, but he also has a year on Cam Reddish as well. So, you know, I don't think we need to put Cam in foul 13. But right now, what we're getting from him and those veterans on the bench and those centers on the team is equaling bad rebounding, bad shooting, and the team with the highest turnover rate in the NBA. That's not a good roster. So my whole point to get all of that out is to say Travis Lincoln's on the clock. Honeymoon is over. Time for him to get to work. Let's see what the bench will look like next year. You got four or five guys that won't be on the team next year. How are you going to replace those guys? What does it look like? And can our bench help to be a strength for the talented guys we believe we have in the starting unit?
You didn't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't think they should have, you don't think they should have given up a first round pick to possibly get Andre Drummond, correct?
Correct.
why? Even when you have four.
Well, you can you find another center that can get you double-digit rebounds? If you take all three Hawks centers, none of them average more than seven rebounds a game. Can you find a center that can get you 10 boards, 9 boards a game?
You know what? There's a center that can get me 20 and 20, and it was sitting right there in Detroit.
Okay.
The 20 and 20 is what makes it interesting that I entertain the fact of giving up the first-round pick. But I do know that if I am just looking for a guy down there that's going to give me double-digit rebounds, I can't go get Steven Adams.
You can. I'm not saying that's not an option. You can.
And I'm pretty sure it's not going to cost me a first-round pick as well to do it.
I got to call Travis Schlenk to the light, man, because two moves that he made or failed to make could have this team in a completely different position right now. Number one, he traded away Kent Bazemore for Evan Turner. Bad trade. If we had Kent Bazemore in this locker room right now.
That was a money move, right? Different.
No, same money. Both okay. expiring. Like, it was literally a swap. Here's Kent Bazemore. Give me Evan Turner.
Okay.
Bad trade. Number two, should have re-signed Dwayne Dedmon. Oh, both of those moves, if you had Dwayne Dedmon in a Hawks jersey and had Kent Bazemore in a Hawks jersey right now, this is probably a different team. And I know those aren't difference makers in headlines or whatever, but they make a difference on a team like this.
They make a difference on our team. That's the thing about it, whereas the pieces that we have aren't making any difference other than just helping us lose more games.
I'm a huge Schlenk fan, but those are two moves that I can identify that have somewhat changed the course of what this season could have been, honestly. So we got to see some bounce back after that.
I can see that. And, you know, now everybody goes from looking at the GM, now they're looking at Coach Lloyd Pierce. I'm not ready to put Lloyd Pierce on the hot seat yet. I'm just not.
Yeah, I don't think we should.
You have a lot of people out there who feel right, as though.
Well to the litany, and I'm going to sound like a broken record. How are you going to put the man on the hot seat with no starting center? Who's the power forward coming off the bench? With no wing off the bench, with all of the deficiencies we have, if you're going to say, and I think the biggest problem the Hawks have, they have a lack of energy on the defensive end at times. They end up down double digits, and then they kind of fight their way to cleaning up the scoreboard at the end. That being said, I don't know how that's on the coach.
I think that's on the coach because, like, how we can recognize that that's what's happening, they're letting it go on the defensive end, and then they're scrapping to just make it look like a better game than what it actually was. Coach, you need to recognize that too and get into your players' heads about, hey, this defensive effort that we're not giving up all game, we need to do a better job of that. That's really the only thing that I've got with coaches. Like, something about it, you've got to trigger something in these boys, I don't care how young they are, to make them give the type of effort that we saw in the second half of last night's game.
Let's say Coach Pierce, just for, you know, conversation's sake, let's say Coach Pierce isn't the guy for the job. Who do you think you could get in here that could be the guy for the job that could get more out of these guys than what we think we're getting?
That's honestly, nobody.
Honestly, like, putting it like that, we're nowhere near that point of having who the right guy for the job is. We
don't even know what the job is.
We don't even know what the job is yet.
So I wonder, with that being said,
the job right now is to get them mentally to play the way that they need to play throughout a full game. That, to me, that is the job. If you can get them to show that type of effort for the whole game, then I think you've done enough because you'll see better results. But if you can't get these guys to lock in from jump, then what are we doing?
Can we even – I'm not even going to ask the question. I'm just going to make the statement. I don't think we can even clearly evaluate Lloyd Pierce at this point based on a couple of things. Like last year, Trey and his rookie season, this year – first 25 games without John Collins. Last year was the first 18 games without John Collins. So it's really difficult to even put a grade on Lloyd Pierce or even evaluate how good of a coaching job he's done so far because he's had a couple of, you know, unfair things happen throughout his tenure here, you know, in a couple of years. So I can't even put a grade on it. I feel like it would be unfair to even judge what he's done up to this point. But something does have to give. Like, eventually, effort does have to show up.
I'm not going to thoroughly grade him until we get some more talent in here.
See, that's me.
I'm not
doing
it.
It's not a thorough grade. It's a grade just on the mentality of your players and are they buying into whatever it is that you've got going on here.
But is that not on the GM? Because if you have the wrong mentality, I think something else that needs to come in here is a little toughness. I wouldn't mind having a Derek Favors coming off the bench and roughing it up. And that's a solid, tough NBA player. If we don't, I don't even know if Trey yet is the alpha dog all the time, not necessarily on the court, but in the locker room with all he does, if he's matured to that point yet. Some of that is the GM has brought in players, they're young, and we don't necessarily have the chemistry yet that the coach needs to go out there on a nightly basis to give him and the city and to each other what they need to win on a regular basis.
Home team, I don't think you're getting the Derek Favors coming off the bench. I really don't.
If Derek Favors was here, he'd be starting.
He'd be starting. Like, it's not a lot of veteran guys. It's not a ton that you would bring to this team that's going to make a difference that's not going to start. In a sense.
Well, Derek Favors is a bad one because you're not sitting down John Collins and you're not sitting down Derek Favors. My point is, we need some tough guys in here. And to say that they don't have the mentality, they don't have it, if he's not getting the most out of these guys, they're not listening, is that a problem? Maybe you got the wrong, you don't have the right guys in here yet to be able to accept the coach. You have a very young team and people are trying to figure out where their sweet spots on the floor are, let alone how to be a pro for 82 games. And I just don't know if you can put that all on the coach.
I want to see what, you know, what moves we make this offseason, what trades are going to go to. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. You got the money, and I'm going to be kicking back, and I'm going to be looking to see how Travis Schlenk works his magic to see, you know, if, hey, this is the offseason where we're really going to see if you're the guy and you're going to earn your money. So I'm waiting to see, and then evaluating based off the talent that we get in, then start the clock for Coach Lloyd Pierce.
Okay, fair enough.
Hey, y'all, we got plenty of ways for y'all to check us out, so make sure that you go subscribe on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or even Shaq Fu Radio, which plays our podcast every Wednesday and Saturday night. You can also catch us on the YouTube channels for the Drop Set Podcast, 680 The Fan, and Atlanta Sports 6. And last but not least, make sure you check out the Drop Step on IG, Twitter, and Facebook.
Zion Williamson made his debut, and it was fun. We want more now. I kind of feel like we were cheated, but I know why they had to do it. Minutes restriction, training staff is going up to Alvin Gentry, telling the man to come out the game while he's on a run like nobody else's business in the fourth quarter with the game on the line, and the man has to sit down. So you have to look out long-term. It wasn't about this game or this season. It's about long-term health and sustainability for Zion Williamson, but 17 straight points, ends up with 22, 8 of 11 from the floor, 4 of 4 from the three-point line, got hot when the game mattered most, and we didn't get to see him finish it off.
Go
ahead.
It was electric. Obviously, he's the first, you know, quarter, you know, most of the game, you didn't get much from him. You know, he may have looked a little winded. Obviously, he is a big boy.
He looked bigger last night, that first quarter. I'm like, man, I don't remember him being this big, dude.
But
he looked weird on the TV for
you're
a
right.
minute.
No, honestly, I don't remember him being that big either. But I think, look, this is an investment we always – I thought that they should have sat him down for the entire season. But we saw what he can bring to the table in the fourth quarter, scoring the 17 points in, a three-minute span. Look, man, you got to protect your investment. And I get it. The medical staff and Alvin Gentry going back and forth. Alvin Gentry, look, man, the man is hot right now.
Alvin Gentry over there shaking his head like, man, I wish he wasn't hot right now.
It's going to be a battle between the medical – forget the Pelicans versus whoever. It's going to be the Pelicans' medical staff versus Alvin Gentry for the rest of this season.
Yeah.
And versus also the fan base. Because obviously two on one side are wanting him to play because they want to see the product. But the other thing is like, look, we don't need it. Look, 20 to 25 minutes. We're going to spread this out as much as we possibly can. When we feel as though he needs to come out, we are going to suggest him to come out.
One thing that I heard after the game that really was like a light bulb that went off, like an aha moment. Legler on ESPN was comparing Zion to Giannis, like the respect that he had last night immediately as he was trying to bring the ball down, like at the top of the three-point line, everybody just drops back into the paint, and then he could kind of move in and make his move. Like, I see a lot of good stuff. I mean, obviously, you know, he's the number one pick in the NBA, you know, so it's a lot of good stuff that's going to be there. But it's a lot of potential, like, to come from this cat. He just got to stay healthy, man. He just got to get his body in the right condition because he's talented. He proved it last night. Like, that was what everybody wanted to see.
The funny thing for me was when he's going up for rebounds and lobs, he looks like he has a 57-inch vertical. On threes, it looks like his feet don't even come off the ground.
They don't. They don't.
The it's highest like jumper without his jump shot.
He shoots threes like most people shoot free throws.
Yeah.
And the one thing I saw, he moved well, and he looks like he's going to be a problem if he's you know, in a situation where he is cutting, because he's big enough where the contact in front of him or on the side of him won't alter him, and he can get to the rim and get some putbacks. So that was interesting. It'll be interesting to see what is in his repertoire. What happens if he doesn't get a lob? What happens if they aren't in transition? What happens if they're just running a set? You know, what are his strengths and how will they be able to play to them moving forward?
And I see that they were really making him shoot that three because he wasn't – nobody was going out there contesting no shot, and he went 4-for-4 from three. So that's one thing that I think he's going to have to consistently prove to a lot of guys in this league, that I'm going to give you that space to make it until I realize that you're actually a threat from that spot.
It was probably a good thing slash bad thing that they had he had his first game against Coach Pop, because you know they specifically went into that game as in, we're not getting embarrassed by Zion. Like right off the bat, like the very first play of the game, they tried to run it. They ran an action to throw Zion a oop. Nah, like Buddy came off of that, doubled him, made sure that was not going down. But one of the most impressive things to me was he missed three shots. And of the three shots that he missed, he got the rebound, the offensive rebound on two of them.
Energy.
And put it back. So
he imposes his will in the game in ways that I've never seen before besides Shaq. As far as like that one defensive rebound where he basically went over your boys.
Yeah,
it wasn't even like he went over his head. He bulldozed through that. You know what I'm saying? And his mass is so much, so big and so strong that Buddy couldn't do nothing but go to the ground from it. So on each of his
Buddy flew out of bounds.
Each of his putbacks, it's like he know he missed and he's already realizing that's a miss. Let me hurry up and bounce back in here. As you're bouncing back in there, you're just knocking everybody out the way so you could grab it and then dunk it. I swear, at the end of the day, I still stick by it. Greg Oden 2.0. He's got talent. The boy is very talented, but I don't think his body's going to be able to last it. I don't see it.
And that's the interesting issue. They want to manage him. I was, you know, obviously because he hadn't played, I would just think with all the time he's missed, you would work him back up to a place where if you were going to use him sparingly early and then let him finish the game. But the fact that they were so adamant about taking him out of the game when the game is on the line, and the truth is they're still – and I thought Van Gundy was a little bit over the line, but he was right. You're still trying to win. Yeah. And while this is about him bigger than last night and bigger than just this week and bigger than just this season, you're still trying to win. And you took a guy out when the game was on the line and in a bigger scenario against a team that's holding on to the eighth seed in the West. You're trying to get to the Western Conference playoffs, and that's a tie-breaking game that you ended up losing that you might have had a chance to win if the guy had stayed in.
Had a chance to win, but honestly, I was looking at it. Even in that 17-point spurt for 3 minutes, they couldn't stop the Spurs.
True.
The Spurs were getting to the cup at will. So it was like, yeah, he's doing all this, and we're giving him 8 feet of space to shoot a three. Well, it's like a free throw at that point in time for most NBA players. I mean, you can see footage of Dwight Howard when you're giving him all types of space in a regular gym, throwing up three-pointers and making 3, 4, 5 of them in a row. So I guess I'm going to say it. I'm not too impressed by it. I was more impressed with the fact of his bounce back to get a put back and stuff. But even in that, I'm like, you're still landing heavy, bro.
Give me 5 games. I want to see 5.
But the medical staff's problem is the fact of how he lands, how he walks, how he treats his trunks.
He's still growing. And the question is, when he's fully mature, you know, what is he going to be at 23 or 24? He's not getting taller. He's not going vertically. So whatever he's doing is going to be on that 6'6 frame. If he's going to continue to put on muscle and continue to be just a unique individual, what does that mean long-term for his NBA career. I think that is fair and something we're all just going to have to watch and find out together.
It's a double-edged sword for this Pelicans organization. I know you took him because he's the most exciting thing to come out since LeBron. But there's, you know, people – this is a sensitive type of thing because everybody's making their money. They're making sure that every time they step into that facility and every time they step into Smoothie King Arena – these people are earning their money to make sure that he stays healthy and that they're making the right decision.
So what can be done to make him seem lighter on his feet?
I don't know.
Because that, to me, that is the only holdup in Zion Williams is you're not light enough on your feet when it comes to jumping up and coming back down. That impact on the ground is going to be hard on this young man.
I really don't know. I don't know if there's anything that can be done, to be honest. And right. I know it's early to say that, but some people's bodies are just the way that they are. I really do. Like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You took the guy. He's exciting. He's electrifying. He's going to get that whole Smoothie King arena rocking.
Rocking. Yep.
But on the other hand, hey, the whole stadium and arena is yelling, Zion, Zion. He's sitting on the bench. We got to take care. I know y'all want him back in, but he's not coming back in this quarter. You see him later. So you're going to have that tug of war. And to draft a guy like that and to have him in your organization, everybody's just going to have to get on the same page and be able to understand that, at least for some time.
Kobe Bryant, going on the record, he says that there are three WNBA players he thought could play in the NBA. And so that sparks, you know, immediate conversation. What is the Mamba doing? What is he talking about? How serious he is? I don't think he is joking around because he called out three players. So it begs the question, is there opportunity for that? Is that something we will ever see? You know, WNBA players are just as prideful as NBA players, in my opinion. And the only way we're going to see if that could help, come to fruition is if a WNBA player tried it. You know, how would that work? Would somebody go to a summer league team or summer league setup and try? He called out three players. It sparked a conversation. I don't think at this point we are going to see it, but, you know, the Mamba has spoken. People are listening.
It's just admiration for the league. He got a young daughter that's about to hoop. You know, we'll be looking at colleges and going to top programs and developing her game in college and then looking to go to pro as well, or at least to the WNBA. So it's the admiration that he has for some of these players in the NBA, the WNBA as a whole, and some of these players in the WNBA, and looking at their game to say, hey, I think – no, sorry.
And he called three players, Diana Taurasi.
No.
Elena Del Don.
No.
And Deladon and Maya Moore.
No. All those are dope, but no.
Well, all right, Maya Moore, because she'd be playing point guard, right?
They'd all have to be.
They all have to be playing point guard.
And all of them don't have point guard skills.
Yeah, Deladon is the biggest.
But Maya Moore got some point guard skills. So, I mean, and
Taurasi can handle the rock.
Taurasi can handle it. Like, to me, if it's going to be a woman that's going to play in the NBA, she's going to have to come with a lot of ball handling skills and slippery feet. She's not going to be – you're not going to see a power forward or a center from the WNBA getting into the NBA. It's just not possible.
That just looks funny.
Well, not even that it looks funny because I don't want to sound disrespectful, but just – physically, you're not.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You can't be that strong. You're not going to be that big and still agile.
And even like I said, the disparity between center in the NBA, a center in the WNBA is a shooting guard.
Is a wing player.
Is in the NBA. So you're talking, oh, I'm 6'6", I'm a center. No, you get out there on that wing and you defend Kobe.
Man, right. as a father of a daughter, I applaud Kobe Bryant for saying something like this because ultimately he's telling his daughter, you could do anything in Absolutely. The world that you want to do. Yeah. He's talking to his daughter through the media, you know, and he's also giving a pat on the back to the three people that he named. I'm going to say this, though. You can't leave Breonna Stewart off that list because she is one of the nastiest things in the WNBA. And then the girl coming out of Oregon, she just is nasty too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get Kobe's point that women's basketball has elevated to a position that it has never been in. These women have a lot more talent than women in previous generations, but it's not on the NBA level.
I was like,
just reel it back.
What a WNBA player a star player, a superstar player, would have to say.
Lisa Leslie said it before.
She has said it before, but in today's game, what they would have to say, what Elena Deladon would have to say, because then I would, you know, maybe just being a jerk, then let's see it. You know, if you really feel that way and y'all are the best and you can find three or five players who are the best, who have skill sets that might be interesting, how would that happen? They are under contract. They have their own teams and their own legacies. Who would be willing to show up and see if they could get on an NBA
roster?
That's not
you being a – that's not – if you're asking that question, that's not you being a jerk. That's the reality of the situation.
Who would be able to
Because you wouldn't be the only person who want to see that.
Lace them up and see about getting an NBA contract, going down to the G League, or going to a summer camp and see you play against some of the young talent coming in the league.
I say we interweave them into the All-Star game in some form or fashion.
I don't have a problem with that.
I mean, that's an exhibition in all forms of an exhibition.
I'm about to say, no, so defense
you might be on to something.
No, yeah, but
you,
I mean,
you won't see nothing in the All-Star game. They don't even play defense in the All-Star
game. That's the perfect scenario.
No, it's not, because then it's just a love fest of shooting up threes and layups and stuff. You're going to let them do whatever. Well, I'm not going to see nothing
that's
in that.
What we need. Just like you mentioned a minute ago, we're not going to see a female power forward putting a man in the post. You know, so that's not a realistic scenario. Something like an All-Star game, having the top 10 WNBA players, you know, having them in the pool of players that the captains pick from, that's a scenario where they can be interweaved in it, and it's a natural thing.
All right, I take all that back. That's actually a great idea, because
just put them in the pool.
Honestly, to have them in the draft, because I'm thinking about street ball. There are those
women
girls
to pick from too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about like street ball. There are those girls that you want to pick up on the team, and they go out there and they gonna bust your behind when they get out there.
I'm gonna give her the ball and say,
go do you.
Go get him.
Get him. Show him.
Yeah.
And we've seen.
And that will draw attraction. I think that could actually help draw attraction to the WNBA, because now everybody's really seeing them do it.
Exactly.
We've seen in some All-Star games when things have gotten close that in the fourth quarter of games, we have seen some really good defense. And we've seen some, you know, some teams put on some displays of, hey, let's try to play some for real basketball.
Yeah, right.
So we all know that the first quarter and the first half is going to be layups and dunks and some one-on-one matchups. It is an exhibition, but we have seen some defense come out. Maybe that would be a step. It is an exhibition, a chance to see, you know, if you could get a WNBA player in there, and then what kind of competition will we see the best going up against the best?
I would love to see it. And I think there'll be more defense played a lot earlier than what you may think in a regular All-Star game.
I just had the voice of one of my women friends go off in my head, and it's saying, why aren't y'all talking about the fact that they don't need to integrate with the NBA? Let's just big up the WNBA. Let's not keep trying to put women in with men.
They have their platform as well.
Like, let's just big that up. Like, I love the fact that Kobe would say this, but at the same time, it's like, they not trying to come and join us. They just want their stuff to be on the same level as what the men's
Well, I won't fully blame Kobe, because he was asked a question.
Right.
And he answered the question. But I do think for the reporter to simply bypass the league that's already there in the WNBA and put those women in the NBA when you have a chance to continue to big up the WNBA every chance that you get, I think that's the aspect of it that I didn't like.
Right, right.
I think it's – and then Kobe's been, I won't say getting criticized, you know, critical response have been, you know, is he saying this because he has daughters? Because he really feels this way, or because he has daughters, he likes the progress, and he just wants to be on the record saying that there is a point now where WNBA players have caught up to NBA players. And he's saying that because he's the father of three girls.
But he's been, as far as I know, he's been a supporter. Well, he's also had daughters for quite some time as well. But he's always been one of the ones at the forefront that's been in support of women's basketball in general. Like, he...
Book, you've got daughters too, right? I've got daughters as well. When you have girls, your mindset just changes. And you do start to look at women in a different type of light. So I don't fault Kobe at all. I think he actually sees this because he actually looks at the women. Why? Because he has to watch his own girls grow up. So he wants them to have those role models that look like them. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think any of this came from a place of, oh, I got daughters and I just want to say some stuff. No, I think it was a genuine spot, because you're watching young ladies grow up. And so when you do that, you tend to start to watch older women, because you want to hopefully see what your daughters are going to grow into.
Yeah. whatever heat he may be catching from this, there should be no heat caught from it at
None
all.
None.
Not from him, at least. None. If you're going to catch some heat, it's from the reporter to ask the question to bypass league that's already there.
That's
the
already
WNBA.
There. Yeah, let's just big that league up. Let's put some promotion behind them a little bit.
Yeah, you know? They need all the promotion they can get, and is like I said, we're having a conversation out in the bullpen about, you know, the WNBA, why, you know, a lot of people don't want to go see it, or why it's not as popular as the NBA. And we talked about that. I talked about how when I was in college, even as on a lower level at HBCU level, where even when the girls would play first, you know, you have people there, but you wouldn't have as many people coming in to see that game as you would the boys game, even if the boys were worse than the girls. And a lot of times they were. The girls were on the floor, were the ones setting records, had the record setting coach who had all the wins. But because of the speed of the game, because of the excitement of the game, because the same move, if a girl and a guy do the same move, it hits a little differently sometimes when a guy does the move, because of the athleticism, because of the swiftness, and because of the quickness of it. So it's a little different. So when you put all that together, the boys may be worse, but the game is going to be, it might be a little bit more exciting.
Well, we'll see if there will be, you know, change and movement. WNBA getting a new CBA, how that will change, how the improvements will come. Will there be more eyes on the game? Will the game continue to grow?
Hey, y'all, we got plenty of ways for y'all to check this out, so make sure you go subscribe
to take
on
place. And then
Apple
eventually,
podcast,
if we'll ever see a
Spotify,
WNBA player or email player
Radio,
in the
which
NBA.
Plays our podcast.
That'll do it for the
Drop
Step Podcast. Want to say thanks again to Shafu Radio, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. We'll see you next time.
For
Houston, the B-Dog, Brandon Harper, and Book the Hook. We'll see you next time. I'm home team on the Drop Step Podcast.
Well,
already.